Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we have Scott Roloff from Watertown, Wisconsin. Scott is the other half of the team that won the National Team Championship, which was a back-to-back victory. Lance Bussey, we had him on a couple weeks ago. Go listen to that episode if you haven't already. Many of you already have. I got some great feedback on it. But Lance does a phenomenal job telling the story of how these tournaments have gone the last couple of years. Partner Scott, I'm really glad that we were able to have our own conversation with Scott in this conversation because we spend a lot more time talking about technical information. And a big part of this story is forward-facing sonar, building confidence in it, how they use it, how Scott likes to operate on it. He spends a lot of time, got a lot of hours on the water figuring out how to utilize and be efficient with forward sonar, and then ultimately how to catch fish and how it plays into lure selection, presentation, and especially to win that Lake Erie tournament that we talked to Lance about. We referenced that, but that's not the only tournament that we talk about. That's not the only fishing experience that Scott references. But you know what? This is a great conversation. Very fishy conversation. Scott is definitely a fishy dude. And his stories, his experiences are definitely something that we can all learn from. So let's get into it here. We got Scott Roloff. We're talking forward sonar, catching big walleyes.
Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. And to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com. That link is in the description. North Dakota is truly home to some world-class fishing opportunities, and as anglers, it is our responsibility to help protect these world-class opportunities by following the aquatic nuisance species protocols here in the state of North Dakota. I'm talking about the Clean, Drain, Dry initiatives. It goes like this. At the end of the day of fishing, or whenever you decide to put your boat or pontoon or whatever you got on the water that day back on the trailer, it is your responsibility to head to the back and pull the plug, make sure the water's draining out of the live well, and walk around, make sure you don't got a bunch of weeds hanging off the trailer. Just clean it all up, take a look at everything, drain the water out of everything before you hop in the vehicle and drive home. Don't assume that the person in the passenger seat did it for you. It is everybody's responsibility. There's no excuses and no exceptions. If you're unsure what these Clean, Drain, Dry protocols are, I'll put a link in the description of this podcast that'll take you to the North Dakota Game and Fish website, and it'll help give you all that information. Again, as anglers, it is our responsibility to know and understand these things and to execute them. And the reality is that the vast majority of the fisheries here in North Dakota are unaffected still by aquatic nuisance species, which means, anglers, we've been doing a great job of cleaning and draining and drying our boats, and it is working. So let's continue to do a great job here in 2024's open water season. Check out the Flopbox bait coolers from Flop Industries. The Flopbox 10 and Flopbox 20 are heavy-duty, roto-molded bait coolers, fully insulated, which comes into play both summer and winter. The aeration system for minnows and other live bait is fully enclosed and lithium powered for reliability and durability. The stainless hardware, the removable chill plate, the list goes on of features, but these high-end bait coolers can easily enhance your fishing experience when you consider their ability to keep your bait alive, fresh, and ready to go when you need it. Check out the Flopbox bait coolers and more at flopindustries.com. That link is in the description of this podcast.
For starters, man, it's your first time on, just like everybody. I want to get to know you a little bit, so tell me a little bit about yourself. What do I got to know fishing wise? Like, where are you from? Where did you get your start in fishing? Like, what do you remember going way back, man? Tell me the whole story about who you are and where you're from.
Well, I've grown up in Watertown, Wisconsin, been here my entire life. There's pretty much, you have to drive a little bit of a distance anywhere to even fish a small little local lake around here. And they're not known for walleyes. It's mostly, as a kid, I've grown up fishing, 3-4 years old, as early as I can remember. Growing up chasing bluegills with my dad, bullheads with my dad, and I still get a lot of flack to this day and age. Bullhead fishing is probably one of my favorite things to do as far as relaxing fishing, fun fishing with the family, and honestly, probably the best table fare fishing in the spring.
What the heck?
I end up talking to a few guys. I'm good friends with Tommy Kimos and Josh Wiesner and all of them. And it's funny that you start talking to some of these other pros, the big name guys, and they're the same way. I mean, we all go back to our roots, and honestly, if I can soak a line in water, I don't care what bites, just whatever's pulling out of the rod, I'm happy.
I think that gets a little bit like underappreciated, or just, you know, shore fishing. And there's just so many people, their origin story, like biggest names in the industry, like all you guys that win these big tournaments on big stages. The story of like you ride your bike down somewhere with your rod across your handlebars, you know, maybe a bucket or a little book bag of gear, whatever, in your front pocket, and going down somewhere with some angleworms you dug up and catching bullheads. I don't know, man. I love that stuff. So I really appreciate that. But yeah, when did you get into like walleye fishing? When did that stuff start to break loose for you?
So growing up, probably till 14 or so, my dad and I mean, it was bass fishing. Everything I watched on TV was bass related. I grew up thinking or wanting to be that guy fishing the Bassmasters and stuff. And at some route, some turn of events, ended up going to Winnebago, if I remember, for my first time. And it was an addiction. The first couple of walleyes we started catching, I mean, I just knew right then I was hooked on walleye. So everything we started doing was just walleye related. My father took me up to Canada for the first time. And as if anybody's ever been to Canada, they understand how easy that is. You can basically throw a plain hook out there and catch fish and think you're a rock star. But I'd say from Winnebago, you know, fishing with my father and stuff. And it wasn't, probably a good 10 years down the road, if not further, I finally went to Green Bay. But I had to do that on my own because my father really never had an interest to go to that big body of water. And it was pretty much trolling. Everything you did was trolling. I mean, jigging was pretty much unheard of back in the day. And I remember fishing, I'm looking at the map right now, 2008, my old partner, Mikey Wright. And that was it, just troll. And we had great success and whatnot. And then throughout the years, it just progressively started kind of switching over a little bit more to structure related, little casts and plastics here and there. But the one video, the one thing that set us off on the jigging route on these walleyes was an Al Lender show they did, jigging wraps. I forget the body of water, but it was summertime. And I mean, it was one after another. So we took that to Green Bay. And the first time out there, we did that. It was an eye opener. It was just unbelievable amount of 6 to 10 pound fish that we caught on jigging wraps in the spring, just casting 30 feet of water. So, and ever since then, we took that. And that was primarily our bait of choice. Didn't know anything else about anything else. And I started playing big paddle tails and the ripping wraps and everything else, hair jigs, and now our new favorite bait, been playing around a lot with that, was the finisher. And the stuff that you can do with that bait is something that you cannot do with any other bait that I've ever put on for walleyes.
I definitely want to focus on that a little bit, because that really is what ties us into that into this recent tournament, right? I mean, and that's a really young bait, but you know, a big part of, like, talking to Lance too, you know, after you guys you know, won that tournament this year, forward sonar, right? That's a big topic of conversation in the industry. When did forward sonar really become a thing for you? And, you know, what's that whole story like?
I believe I got my first Garmin unit probably 2 years after it came out. I remember I was kind of skeptic like everybody else that hasn't had it. Like, no, this can't really make that much of a difference. You know, it was $3,000 at the time, like quite the investment. And whatnot. I mean, I do concrete for a living, so, you know, work my tail off for what I have. So I remember one time talking to Isaac Lackish, good friend of mine, and he was explaining to me out on the bay that for every couple fish that you see on your side image or on your 2D, he said, multiply that, you know, by 10 or 20. He said, you're looking, there's schools of 50 or more fish, but you're only seeing one or two. And I just remember, like, no, there's no way, you know, exaggerate the fish story that we all tell. And I think later on that winter, I finally bit the bullet and bought one, threw it on the boat. And I remember that spring, I'm trying to learn this thing all on my own. I talked to Isaac a little bit for setups and whatnot, but I remember going out to a small little lake by me. Went out in spring. It was like 40, 50 feet of water. Dropped it down. I wanted to start playing with settings. Started casting a bobber with an ice fishing jig and just getting that setting just perfect so I can read my ice fishing jig out to 80 feet in front of the boat. At that point, I knew, okay, this thing is right. Now let's go try to find some fish and see what it looks like. And playing around with that one day, just stupidly, I learned a whole lifetime of information on this little lake. And one day, understanding how these giant bluegills for that day in May, who would think are out in 40, 50 feet of water suspended 10 feet down. Something that without live scope, I never would have knew about. So right there, that really opened my eye up to the possibilities with this thing. And then I remember going out to the bay summertime. It was out by Chambers Island. And same thing, you know, we were seeing a couple fish here and there. I dropped that live scope and I panned. And there was literally pushing upwards of 100 fish. And you're like, no, this can't be real. And you throw your bait in there, and it was one after another. I'm like, what this thing could show you was insane. But at the same time that this technology can hurt you just as bad, I've seen so many guys come past us relying solely on live scope or live image, forward facing sonar, and they'll go past us and wonder why we're fishing there. They're not seeing anything. But this is typically when you're fishing structure, the breaks, the big rocks. Those fish are laying so tight to that bottom that you're not seeing them live scope. So I'm still doing a lot of blind casting, but I'm always using my live scope, panning around to see if there's any schools of fish in the area. But we've won a couple of events without live scope. We had live scope in a boat, but we caught them without that. And actually, when we won last year, we caught several fish without that. Again, it's just, if they're laying tight to the structure and stuff and guys are just driving around relying solely on that, it can hurt you just as bad. But when they're off the bottom and stuff, I mean, it's a great searching tool. Another thing that's always in the water when I'm cruising around and just looking for schools of bait fish or just life in general.
Like early on when you first got it and you were building confidence in it with walleye fishing, I guess I'm kind of like curious about those specific stories of, you know, where you were, what the conditions were like, and what it was that you were using it for.
Yeah, first, I mean, it was the, be honest, it was the quick, easy catch. I really didn't try to understand why they were there, why I was seeing them with it. I was just driving around like a crazy man, find the fish, cast at them when they were suspended in their schools. And it wasn't until the last couple of years I've honestly just sat there and I've studied these fish, how they're moving around in the water with different types, you know, with whether it's sunny or windy or cool fronts or whatnot, and just seeing how these things are interacting with your bait. And then that's the other huge thing is throwing. I mean, it makes it so much easier if you can see these fish and throw random baits in there. And if you catch one on that bait right away, there's a lot of times I will put a different bait on instantly and just keep cycling through to see what actually works the best, what doesn't work, and then make mental notes of that for later on and progress down the lake, down the structure, and the same thing. It just keep dissecting it and that's about it honestly. You go out there, you just play with the settings are constantly changing for me every day, whether I change the surface clarity or gain or whatnot. But I've learned through the years that for beginners, when they set these things up, you want your color gain cranked in the 90s. You want to make your jig pop like a flashlight staring back at you. Like I said, I could see a tiny little ice fishing jig 80 feet out in a bobber sitting there 20 feet down right now. But if people look at my post, they'll also know that I have a lot of disturbance on my screen. But the setup is just, that's the way that I can see the stuff. And then you just got to really pay attention to what you're looking at. And it's crazy amount of focus goes into looking at these things. But
Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. And to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com. That link is in the description. North Dakota is truly home to some world-class fishing opportunities, and as anglers, it is our responsibility to help protect these world-class opportunities by following the aquatic nuisance species protocols here in the state of North Dakota. I'm talking about the Clean, Drain, Dry initiatives. It goes like this. At the end of the day of fishing, or whenever you decide to put your boat or pontoon or whatever you got on the water that day back on the trailer, it is your responsibility to head to the back and pull the plug, make sure the water's draining out of the live well, and walk around, make sure you don't got a bunch of weeds hanging off the trailer. Just clean it all up. Take a look at everything and drain the water out of everything before you hop in the vehicle and drive home. Don't assume that the person in the passenger seat did it for you. It is everybody's responsibility. There's no excuses and no exceptions. If you're unsure what these Clean, Drain, Dry protocols are, I'll put a link in the description of this podcast that'll take you to the North Dakota Game and Fish website, and it'll help give you all that information. Again, as anglers, it is our responsibility to know and understand these things and to execute them. And the reality is that so many, the vast majority of the fisheries here in North Dakota are unaffected still by aquatic nuisance species, which means, anglers, we've been doing a great job of cleaning and draining and drying our boats, and it is working. So let's continue to do a great job here in 2024's open water season. Check out the Flopbox bait coolers from Flop Industries. The Flopbox 10 and Flopbox 20 are heavy-duty, roto-molded bait coolers, fully insulated, which comes into play both summer and winter. The aeration system for minnows and other live bait is fully enclosed and lithium-powered for reliability and durability. The stainless hardware, the removable chill plate, the list goes on of features, but these high-end bait coolers can easily enhance your fishing experience when you consider their ability to keep your bait alive, fresh, and ready to go when you need it. Check out the Flopbox bait coolers and more at flopindustries.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Do you still find time to troll then a little bit? I mean, you talk about being baptized into walleye fishing with a lot of trolling in the Winnebago and stuff. I mean, there's still a lot of trolling that happens out there. Or are you kind of exclusive to the casting now?
I still enjoy trolling every now and then. I mean, it's a relaxing way, especially if you have people out that are just getting into walleye fishing and stuff. It's a great way to get them to catch fish relatively easily. Before I learned about this bait that we used, there was certain times that trolling was like the only way to target these fish when they were 10, 20 feet down over deep water, because everything you throw at them was bottom orientated baits and your bait would blast right through them. And those fish aren't going to chase at 30, 40 feet down most times. I've never really had a bait that I could work them with until now. So,
oh, yeah,
I'm getting away more and more from trolling. I'm not selling all the trolling stuff yet. I actually, for that Erie event, I joke around with Lance. I literally went out and bought a couple $1,000 worth of bandits, because that's Erie. You had to have bandits.
No, true. True. But I just like asking that because there's definitely like, you know, and that's kind of the next question is like, what do you feel like you've learned? Like, what do you feel like have been kind of the big ticket learnings, the big ticket aha moments, if at all, with forward sonar and walleye fishing? Anywhere that you go, like, are there some things or just some theories that you thought about walleyes for all those years, just things that you were taught or, you know, but maybe some things that you now kind of had to leave behind? I mean, like, what would you say are the things that you did or thought about walleyes the most that you now realize maybe ain't the case?
Yeah, I'd say the biggest thing is growing up, everybody said you had to fish steep breaks. It was always break orientated for your walleyes. Find the steepest break, set up on that, and you're going to catch fish. And honestly, I get on 10 to 15 foot flats for the most part, and sand flats at that, and drop that live scope down, and it's amazing how many fish are just laying on a structureless sand flat versus the rocks or the breaks and whatnot. No bait around. It's just like they're sunning themselves. They're just resting and whatnot. And the other really cool thing is I've always thought of it. I've always wondered about it. It's always in the back of my head. Where do these big fish goal. I mean, like Green Bay, for instance, it's 100 feet of water out there by Door County. I've heard stories of the white fishermen just loading up their nets, you know, when the big walleyes are cruising through and whatnot. So you know they're out there in the deep. And that live scope is showing it to me. Shows you bait balls that are 20, 30, 40 feet down, and then you'll see those big arcs right below them. And those are primarily fish that we use to troll, pulling harnesses through it and whatnot to keep your bait there. So I'm definitely looking forward to this summer attacking those fish with the finisher, and I think it's going to be fun.
You know, tell me now, you know, let's get into this recent tournament while we still have a lot of time here. I want to hear about this tournament on Erie that you and Lance just won, the national team championship. Like I said, Lance told us the story, you know, kind of the, you know, the behind the scenes, the personal story, you know, a few weeks ago after the tournament. But for you, I want to hear the story of, you know, how you broke it down and how you caught those fish, you know, getting into detail, you know, with the bait, talking about the finisher. I want to hear about the, you know, everything that you're willing to share anyways, about the forward sonar, how you utilized it, what you feel like you learned with it, and then talk about finishing the fisher. I want to hear the whole story, man, going out there and pre-fishing and what you thought of it. I want to hear the whole forward sonar story.
Yeah, so, I mean, the way out there, we were listening to your podcast. We were listening to Hoyer and everybody just talking about that past NWT event. We're trying to get a feeling for it. And before we even went out there, Lance made all the phone calls and talking to people. And we pretty much decided that we were never going to go west. So we were never going to go fishing where Hoyer and everybody was by the islands. We were going to focus east. And so we get out there and we go do what we thought we had to do. And that was go out to the mud. Everybody's out in the mud, whether it's 30 feet of water, 50 feet of water. And we just drove around for an hour and just started at 30, went out a couple miles, zigzag back and forth. And we were kind of lost at that point because we didn't know what do you set up on. We're looking at our graph and everything looks the same for size of fish. We're like, okay, here's a bigger colored fish. We'd set down and we're trying to understand the size of fish on a live scope yet. I used to have a 32, and what the 32 looks like versus the 34 is night and day. The 32, all your walleyes were long, straight white lines. And there were some longer white lines to your bigger fish. Well, the 34 now is showing we ended up learning that your fish, your giant fish, look like fuzzy blobs. And that was just their tails, their fins moving. You could actually see the silhouette of the fish, the size of it, way better than what you could on 32. But it was a learning curve. It took us a couple days to figure this out. But once we figured it out, it was, okay, now we're not going to drop any lines until we see the right fish. But, so we're out there cruising around. And I think the first day was an eye-opener. I don't even know what we caught, 50, 60 fish. I don't even think we had one remotely close to 6 or 7 pounds. And that was the first day that I think Lance mentioned it too. We actually drove over the spot that we ended up winning it on without even fishing it because we didn't see anything high speed graphing. And that's a good one for this live scope for what happened later on in a week. So the next day we go out again, carry the same routine down the lake further. Same thing, you know, this time we got a couple 6-7 pounders, and we're feeling confident a little bit, but it's the mud. We don't know what to expect, how much these things move. Lance is showing me current charts where I believe it was 1.5 feet per second the current was out there, which just seems crazy. And again, we're catching so many fish in that 14 to 22 inch range and a couple mid-20s here and there, and guys are trolling by us, catching them. Just no shortage of fish. And Lance is talking about it. And I'm still hung up on this whole thing with Hoyer out in the mud. But luckily, Lance was able to talk a bunch of sense in. I mean, we went back to doing what we do, and that's fishing structure. Yep. And we'll bump heads now and then, but we talk everything out, and we use logic, and it always works out the best. That's why I say him and I are both together. He makes me fish so much better. So But yeah, so we went and fished Avon Point. I think that was our third day of pre-fishing. And we were fishing deeper still, 30 feet of water. And we were catching 4 to 5 pounders. I remember we saw a line of boats trolling up shallow, like 18 feet of water. Like, oh, let's go check it out. Drop live scope down. Couple fish here and there, not as many as what's out deep. And that's what, we kind of figured out was the bigger fish were solo. Then we started catching 6 to 7 pounders. Like, okay, this is gonna work. And then that was towards the end of the day. So the next day we came back, started from there, started working our way down Avon Point. I think we made like a couple mile pass, and every little bit we'd catch another 6, 7 pounders. We felt pretty good with. You're seeing plenty of big fish on live scope. Sometimes they're in pairs of two or three, and at that point there wasn't much wind, so we could let the boat drift sideways. So Lance was using the live scope in the back. I'm using one in front, and we're both catching fish equally as well. And I wish we could have did that for the tournament. I really do. But for the event, we had a high speed chase these things, because you're looking solely for the biggest of the big fish, obviously, for that event. But I think it was the fourth or fifth day where we're looking at the forecast, and we knew what was coming at us, and it wasn't good. And I don't like big waves. I'll drive the biggest of the big boats like a grandpa and do 10 miles an hour. And it's just, I don't want to beat myself. I don't want to break anything. And I remember going to Lance, like, well, we got to go, we're both talking. We got to go fish Haven. It set up just like Avon Point. Let's go there. And I told him, God, I hope we catch nothing. I said, I really hope we catch nothing. And we went over there, and wouldn't you know it? It wasn't long, and we had like a 7 pounder, and then there was a couple 8 pounders. I'm like, what did we just figure out? And we just kept playing in there, and it was endless amounts of big fish up shallow, and nobody was in there working us. Everybody was on the break. We're like, this is crazy. So I think it was the very next day we just went back graphing. We just dropped live scope down. And that's where it really, really paid off. I mean, just drop live scope down. You didn't even need to cast at these fish. You could just tell which ones are big. Lay away point every time you saw a big one. And then you come back, a couple hours later, make another pass through there, and then change your symbol and lay them down on another one. And you can progressively see how these things are moving around in there to get a feel what we're gonna have to do. And then the first day of the event, it was fairly good chop right away in the morning, and really couldn't use two live scopes. You had to be both in the front or just randomly casting. But yeah, we ended up hunting these big fish down solely on live scope. You'd see fish that you wanted to cast at. They were 5, 6 pounders, and I'll say boom, one would pop out at you that would just look like a carp on the screen. And yeah, you'd study that fish before I would even cast. I have to be like, you gonna cast at that? I'm like, yep, just kind of figuring out which way that thing is moving, how fast it's moving. Otherwise you're making so many bad casts, and if you make one or too many casts, your boat's drifting over these fish before you can even get it down to them. So that's where that live scope was perfect. Just watch your bait go down. I purposely would cast past these fish, watch the bait go down real as fast as I could right above them, free fall it. And then if they didn't hit right within the first couple hops, a lot of these fish would fall right back to the boat. And that was the most fun I had, was just toying with them like a cat with a little chase toy, and making them jump around down below the boat and whatnot. And then Lance had, he loves that death jig every now and then. Let me tell you, he has the patience for that. I'd watch those things bite his rod, and my instinct is to set the hook every time. I'm horrible. And he just loads up on that rod and just cranks it. I'm like, oh my God, how did you do this? And again, that forward facing sonar was perfect for that, just to watch those fish following his bait for insane amount of time until he would get to the boat. He couldn't reel it anymore without pulling away. He would just hold it and let the current naturally spin the blades, and it'd whack it like that.
But, you know, so we don't get too far along, like, you know, talking about finding these fish, and you were figuring out the progression of your pre-fish where it took you a couple days to recognize which fish were the right fish. And you're sampling different types of spots, and you realize that structure in a little shallower water was more your style and turned out to be productive. So you're starting to put those pieces together. But, you know, are these the type of fish, like the way they were setting up, like the fish you ended up fishing in the tournament, like could you have seen these fish on side imaging?
No, that's the thing. We didn't see anything hardly on side imaging, 2D. I don't know what the reason was for that. Because these fish were not that spooky. They would let you drift over them. I suppose if you motored on top of them, they would go to the bottom. We watched a couple fish go to the bottom. I mean, we had boats trolling next to us. They never caught a fish. But again, we never saw a fish on side image, which blows my mind, because once you get inside about 20 feet of water, you can start reading that really, really good. But yeah, that was the craziest thing. If you honestly did not drop live scope down, you never known these fish existed. You could drive over top of them at 30 miles an hour. You didn't mark them. It's hard to explain unless you saw it with your own eyes. It didn't make sense what was going on.
So tell me about when you're pre-fishing, or, you know, tell me about the bait you used, you know, the finisher. I've been kind of dying to have a good conversation about this bait, because it's a fun looking bait. I filled a couple of slides up when they launched that bait. I thought, you know, I'll definitely be able to find a time and a place for these. They just looked like fun. You know, Berkeley does a great job with everything. They don't launch something unless, you know, they believe in it. So I was like, you know what? You know, this looks great, but I've been dying to have a good conversation with somebody. You know, this is easily the biggest walleye tournament or the biggest check that's been cashed in, you know, this year since the finishers even existed. So I guess, you know, I'm just kind of curious about that. I mean, when did you start fishing it? Like, you know, what do you like about that bait? When did you start fishing it? When did you start applying it on Lake Erie in that tournament? I mean, I imagine you were trying different baits, different things, whatever. I guess I'd like to hear a little bit about your story going back with the finisher.
Yeah, I think it was probably the second day we were in Erie is when I finally put that bait on. We were doing well with plastics. Again, this was all based off of Hoyer, you know, jig and plastic, and we were catching fish with that. And I remember trying one of my favorite baits at home, which is a blade bait. Never got a bite on that. I could not believe that on Erie to not be able to get a fish on that bait. The hair jigs that we won last year on, I couldn't catch anything on hair jigs. I did not try jigging wraps or any of that. And it was pretty much just the white plastic. And then remember, I'm like, well, Tommy Kimo's, you know, I was giving him some crap earlier last year when he had those for the NTC, when none of us were able to have it yet. It was just something that a select few got to play with,
right?
And I remember him telling me how much he loved it at that point. I'm like, well, you know, I put a lot of stock into what Tommy Kimo says.
Yeah,
so I made sure I had two of each color before I headed out to Erie. And I'm like, okay, so whatever, I'll drop this on. Dropped it. I mean, every single fish I was dropping this on out there, they were just coming up and whacking at it. And it was too easy. It was just, and your hooking percentage for me was pretty good at first. And then I started missing and losing them. And we went back to the cabin that night. We're discussing it. And I always carry a bag full of different size Berkeley Fusion treble hooks. I'm like, well, I'm going to take the back one off. It was a size 8, replace it with a 6. Well, that solved that problem. And
just a little wider gap hook, you think?
Yep, just a slightly bigger hook. But the other key thing to fighting fish with this thing is with the 9, if anybody's ever got to put one in their hand, is that they're pretty heavy in the head. So these fish, you know, when they're doing those violent head shakes, they're trying to work that hook out of their face. That kind of took Hoyer's advice when he said he was hooking them and he was just like cranking them to the boat hard. Well, that's what I did with these things. And I mean, I had a 95% success rate, never losing a fish. It was just, you crank them, looked like the rod was going to break. It was no fun fighting them like that, but that's what you had to do to get the fishing without shaking the hook.
So what kind of setup do you like to throw it on?
I had that on a stiffer rod, the Veritas, the medium. I believe it was a 7 foot with 10 pound X9 line with 15 pound Berkeley fluorocarbon. And I had like an 8 foot leader for that. Out there, I don't think you need a leader like that just because of the water clarity, but that's just something we do back at home. But you definitely needed a stiffer rod tip versus the softer one just to get that little snap that I like to do with my wrist. Just, you don't want to do a big sweep. You don't want to do these great big jabs at it like you see a lot of guys do. That's the overzealous thing. I kind of do it when I got a little bit of a slack in line just to give it that more little snap, and it works it, you know, right to left pretty good. And it's something that I was playing around with the water as we're motoring around looking for fish. Like Lance noticed, I keep that thing in water and I just keep working on different cadences, just watch how that thing works in the water. And it sits so perfectly horizontal that you can jig it like a jigging wrap. And at the same time, when you cast and you're bringing it back, it's almost like a jerk bait at the same time. It's the best of both worlds. And I cannot wait to get out on the bay and start throwing this thing around out here and see what I can't do.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm curious about all that, you know. I mean, the versatility of the bait and just, you know, some of your confidences with it out on Erie. I mean, was it literally just the shoe fit from the first cast, that, you know, the first good cast you had, the fish just crushed it? I mean, is it just a fish magnet like that, or did you learn a little bit of anything about the cadence that was really triggering the bigger fish?
Yeah, I mean, the cadence was the same for whether they were small or big. But it was pretty much the same. It was, I would always start off with one, like a 1 foot snap, and then it'd be just a couple little 2 to 4 inch quick hops, just could make it walk the dog a little bit and let it free fall and do it again. And I'd be watching live scope. So if my bait's rising up in the current above it and it's not going down, well, I would open the bail, free fall it past that fish again, because that fish would race towards the bottom with it. And then I would do a couple quick 2, 3, 4 little jerks, bringing that bait up and getting that fish to come up. And there was a couple times I got those fish to come up within 8 to 10 feet of the bottom of the boat before they would hammer it. And it was just how much that they were chasing this thing. To never lose interest in this bait that close to the boat is what blew my mind.
Do you feel like color mattered or anything like that?
Definitely. I only played with two colors. Once I had those two really dialed in, it was the same thing every day, every morning till about 9 a.m. It was that French pearl was absolutely lights out. Or if you had cloud cover raining, it was that French pearl. And then sunny out from 9 a.m. to rest of the day, it was that OG blue. And that thing, I mean, I have the bait that has half the paint's gone off of it. And it was, I think it was working better. Missing, looked like natural scale pattern, literally half the paint. You could see through the bait now. And obviously that one's never going to be used again. That's being hung up with the plaque.
But sure.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it was those two colors. Lance had, we had one backup of each one of those. So I gave Lance one of my, I forget what it was called, but it was purple with chartreuse on the bottom. And that thing was working just as well. And it is such an easy bait to learn. It just takes 10, 15 minutes to get that cadence figured out, watch him on live scope, and then the rest is history.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a type of bait too, just like a jigging wrap, just like a lot of, you know, sort of, you know, the type of baits that bait evolved from. But it's a good blind casting bait too, I imagine. You probably spend 99% of your time on live scope, but listening to your cadence and your setup and the type of spot that you're fishing, I'm sure there's a lot of people listening, you know, right now that can just think of their own home body of water or wherever they're going fishing next, that, you know, there's probably a scenario you know, with or without LiveScope, that, you know, like I said, just with like a lot of those types of baits where, you know, blind casting, but understanding the cadence, you know, understanding how to make, to trigger bites. Gosh, you know, I mean, that's a really steep learning curve. You ever think about that? Like you putting that all together to fit, you know, to win a Lake Erie tournament. Lake Erie's not your backyard by any means. I mean, do you ever just try to sum up just how wild it is, you know, for you guys to go, I mean, not just back to, I mean, not just win this tournament, but it's like back to back, like, my gosh.
Yeah, it's honestly, I mean, I'm sitting here by both the trophies right now, and it just, it still just doesn't seem real. I mean, we went out there, and our main goal, you know, obviously it would be great to win it, but Lance has never been there. I've been there a lot when I was a kid. Never fishing where we fish. It was always the Western Basin, Mombi River, all that stuff. Completely different. But yeah, it's surreal just to be in that position to try to win it. And then, you know, I mean, the first day I felt like I let us down. I lost. I bet you I lost four or five really nice fish that day, and I thought I blew our chance at. At a shot at winning it, because I think we came in with 38 pounds in our scale, and the boat was saying 36. So I'm like, oh, this is not good. And then you see ahead of you is the Erie boys. I mean, this is their home. They're going to go out and crack 40 pounds. And sure enough, you know, three of them had 40 plus pounds. They're like, well, joking around that night, it goes like this, we got to get 42 pounds. Man, I mean, it was just, joke around, we're having fun, you know, it is what it is. We're catching fish, having a blast. We gave ourselves a chance, and sure enough, you know, we went out there and like the last fish that I think we put in the boat that was a keeper was that 10 and a half pounder that I caught. And shortly after that, our bow mount died. I never thought you could drain I never thought you could drain lithium batteries, but I had that thing on 10 powering into the current. And then the waves, just hunting those fish down, just giving it everything we had. And I'll say, boom, it went dead on us. So there we were, drifting for the next 45 minutes. And Lance was catching them in the back of the boat with the pole mount. I had to turn manually with my hand, the head, to try to pan around at fish.
No way.
Yeah. Yep, yep. And I remember telling Lance, I'm like, you could feel the wind on the back of our neck. We knew what it was supposed to do, but where we were at by Cleveland off Fish Haven, it wasn't windy. And I just kept thinking, you know, maybe, you know, we always look at that, like things happen for a reason. I'm like, maybe it's just time for us to go. I'm like, how are we going to call out a 7 pounder, you know, for another 8 pounder with the odds of that and whatnot. And we knew we already had 40 on our scale. So we left, our first marker waypoint was 10 miles back, and that was easy traveling. But once we hit Avon Point, that's when we both realized what we were driving into, and it was scary. And I'm just so glad, because we joke about it, I mean, if that bow mount didn't die, we would have sat there till we figured we would have needed 45 minutes to get back in. We would have been late, and we would have lost our weight. That's
unbelievable.
Yes, it's just these stories that continue with Lance and I, just the most unbelievable stuff keeps happening.
Yeah, you guys are living right, man. I appreciate that. I mean, that is an unbelievable, you know, real story. That and gosh, think about how many awesome stories are like that out there, that, you know, before podcasting, before anybody could share them, like, you know that stuff's gonna live forever now, man. That is unbelievable, man. Meant to be. Well, how meant to be.
Right. And one of the greatest, I got a phone call this past weekend. I mean, it was awesome. So our first day out there fishing, we were in Cleveland, and there were some local guys, and they had a flat. And I remember Lance talking about it, how we helped him with the jack I brought and whatnot. And I talked to him a little bit after we won and stuff. You know, they were talking about the finisher, how to use it and stuff. And I talked to him for a little bit about it. And he calls me up. They're sending me a message, I think it was Sunday, saying, hey, you're not going to believe this, but I did exactly what you told me to do, and we just won the event out on Erie. I'm like, so I'm glad it's helping people, helping some people out at least. So,
God, that is awesome. Well, I know I'm going to be using, I'm going to be thinking about, I'm going to send you a picture. It might not be like Absolutely. A first place trophy on Erie or whatever, but if I catch like a 3-pounder on Lake Sakakawea here in the next couple of weeks out of finisher, I'm going to send you a picture. I guarantee you, brother. That is awesome. You know, like I said, I've been dying to have a good conversation about the finisher. I had a lot of faith that is a very interesting bait and that cool things are probably going to happen with it. And, you know, it's built for forward sonar, so it's a little dependent on that, but man, it didn't take long, you know, for a bait like that to be launched and to start producing for, you know, on big stages. And, I find that really, really cool, but it definitely takes curious and, talented and skilled, thoughtful anglers like yourself to have the right idea, to put it in a position to win. And, you know, that's true with any bait. You know, like any bait that's ever been built, the real pass or fail test is can people catch fish on them? And a lot of great ideas have probably gone in the garbage. A lot of baits might have been, you know, in history maybe made and didn't realize just what they would end up as. You know, there's just amazing stories. But that, you know, that finisher, I definitely, I'm glad we definitely talk about it. I think a lot of people get a lot out of that. That bait's going to be around for a long time, or certainly is the beginnings of almost like a new category of bait, you know, because like you say, it's built off of, at least from a walleye angler's perspective, it's the manifestation of it is really what we've learned through fishing glide baits. But you got to get rid of that fin and just the shape of it, everything about it. There's just so many differences that it's not a glide bait as we know glide baits. But then to have that, the ability to hold it in a water column and work it back and forth like a jerk bait, that those are all things that I've heard about, you know, that, but, to hear your personal story, man, it definitely gives me a lot of confidence to go out and try it, man. I really, really appreciate it. Maybe hopefully Berkeley, sends you a few of them. I don't know if you work with them or not, but
they're taking care of us, and none of this, what we're doing, none of this was to get anything out of it. I mean, we're glad to be out here and just helping other people with this bait and fish in general. Like Lance and him and I, we can just talk fishing all day long, and if we're not doing it, at least we can talk about it.
Yeah, dude, I really appreciate it. I appreciate you having time for this and sharing what you do. Not everybody that fishes high level tournaments, you know, I know you and Lance both have a different living. It, you know, fishing isn't how you pay your bills, but it's a meaningful thing in your life. It's more than just a hobby. You guys are on a super high level, and you're competing against the best of the best. Back-to-back national tournament or team championships, unbelievable. I mean, it's the biggest proper boat field. In walleye fishing, like there isn't another tournament on that level with that kind of payouts or anything like that. That, you know, 200 boats or whatever it is, you know, it's like 190 or whatever it is, right?
287
or 300? Yeah. It's like 280. Yeah,
from last time.
Yeah, dude, it's just like insane, insane. Man, I appreciate all the stories, dude. I'll say this: let's sign this off. If there's more we got to talk about, the fans, the write-ins will let us know, and then we'll just get back on the horn and we'll do this all over again. But, to sign this off, man, anything that else pops into your mind, go ahead. Otherwise, I would just say, you know, promote yourself. Any way that somebody could reach out or follow along, if they had questions or, you know, your social media or however, whatever you want to promote, man, go ahead.
Yeah, if anybody wants to further talk about live scope or the bait itself, the finisher or whatnot, feel free to reach out and send me a message via Facebook, and I will definitely get back to you. Definitely more than glad to help everybody else. So that's about it.
There it is, man. Scott Roloff, dude. I really, really appreciate it, dude. And